Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Gadget Show podcast. I'm Jason Bradbury.
And I'm Susie Perry. And today's episode is absolutely stacked with tech stories. But before we dive in, a huge shout out to our sponsor, CEX.
Yep, they are absolutely brilliant if you're after tech that doesn't cost the earth. Trade in stuff you're not using and walk out with a console, a new phone, a laptop, whatever.
All pre-loved. All tested, all backed with a 5-year warranty, which is properly impressive.
Yep, check them out at webuy.com, that's WEBUY.com, or head into your local CX store and have a rummage. In this week's episodes, AI robots are here and bad mobile phone signals look to be a thing of the past. I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah, me too. But before we dive in, what's caught your eye this week, Jace?
Well, we need to talk about one of the biggest gaming stories of recent times. Halo is coming to PlayStation.
I know, I thought you'd want to discuss this.
Well, exactly. Old Master Chief on a PS5 controller. What do you think about that? So, I'll just sketch out the basic story, Suze.
Yep.
Microsoft, as you know, have confirmed Halo Campaign Evolved, as opposed to Combat Evolved, which, of course, is a full Unreal Engine 5 remake of the original Combat Evolved, is launching on the Xbox, obviously, on the PC, blah-de-blah, but also on the PS5 in 2026. So this is not a remaster, right? It's an actual rebuilt campaign with, I think I'm right in saying so, but I'm sure chat will put me right if I'm wrong. New missions, new weapons from later Halo titles. Also an improved Warthog, with improved handling, okay, which I guess is an improved Warthog, and a 4-player online co-op mode across platforms, although I don't know if I'm going to be able to relive the halcyon days. Is that the phrase? Halcyon days.
Halcyon days.
Of 4-player Combat Evolved, which I just can never forget. It was an incredible part of my life because I don't think that's going to be available, certainly at launch. The messaging from Microsoft is Halo is on PlayStation going forward. So this is interesting. For anyone who lived through the OG Xbox era, this is, well, it's wild. You know, Halo was the identity of the Xbox. And for gamers in general, though, I think this is probably really good news. I mean, I'd love to sort of, you know, covet. I'm an Xboxer. Got a PS5, but I'm an... Have I got a PS... No, I sold my PS5 Pro recently to CEX. That's not a lie. Our sponsor, anyway... Short of a bit of cash, might have to pick up one in the new year to replace it. But anyway, point being, I think this is good news because, you know, it's easy to sort of get a bit selfish about these things. But actually, all it means is more money for the developers of Halo so that hopefully the franchise can continue.
Yeah. So, well, Master Chief crossing the streams. What's not to love about that? Shall we have a little chat about the Nothing phone? Because they've come out with their little budget banger, haven't they?
Yeah, the Nothing Phone 3A Lite. So we've been fans on this podcast of Nothing, meaning the phone, because the design is beautiful. The operating system's really nice. Good feature set, decent cameras, blah, blah, blah. The Nothing Phone 3A Lite has now dropped, and it's even cheaper than the 3A. I know it's rather confusing, isn't it, if you're not... keeping up with this. So the current Nothing Phone 3A, Suze, is, I think, £329. And the 3A Lite, which has just been announced with a less impressive feature set, is £249. Well, it starts at that price. So you're getting a smartphone with a lovely design and you know, okay feature set. I'll tell you what the features are in a second, the spec, for £250. I mean, amazing.
It's good. I think that's good. Do you want to go through the spec?
It's got a AMOLED screen, 120Hz, which is incredible, isn't it, for a £250 phone. 8 gig of RAM, 250 gigs of storage, 50-megapixel main camera, Suze, plus ultra wide and macro functions, and a 16-megapixel selfie camera, which sounds pretty good to me.
£249, that's a bit more than a basic spec for that money, isn't it?
The only thing I would say, and a lot of people have been commenting on this online, is that it comes with pre-installed apps and lock screen ads, you know, sort of otherwise known as bloatware. This, according to Nothing, is to help them reach such a competitive price point, right? But, and again, I'm giving over to the experts, over to you out there. If you've got one of these phones, if you are down with this launch, because there's only so much research that we can do on the Gadget Show podcast, let me know if the following statement is true or false. I think you can uninstall said bloatware, all right? What it means is that when it's in a lock screen mode, you get sort of stories that are kind of advertorials. You get adverts that if you click, it's a bit clickbaity. It's about trying to, you know, increase the revenue for Nothing so that they can subsidize this low-cost phone. But I would say if you can uninstall those, then happy days. If not, then it's up to you, isn't it? You know.
Well, you know, it's not going to compete, is it, with the sort of top brands that we talk about, Samsung's, the Apples. But this is something different. This is coming in at a different price, spec. And if you don't need the, you know, like the Zoom that you were talking about, if it's just a phone to use on a daily basis, maybe, you know, that you're buying for your kids or whatever.
That's what I think.
It's far more affordable, isn't it? We had a question, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago from somebody asking us.
And I actually recommended the 3A, didn't I?
Yeah, and actually maybe the Lite would be better because it's, you know, nearly it's £100 cheaper.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. Comes in two colours, black and white. White looks like something out of a Stanley Kubrick movie, and I love it. Anyway, Suze, what about you? What's got you excited this week?
Well, the DJI caught my eye this week because they've made some announcements, haven't they? Starting with something that is a little bit different for them. So they've officially entered the robot vacuum market. I know you'd like, ooh, that's not very exciting. But it's something called the Romo series. So think of it as a DJI vac, if you like. It's not your average robo vac that bumps into chairs, legs and, you know, takes the cat for a ride. It's not that kind of thing. This uses dual fisheye vision sensors and solid state LiDAR. So it can actually see what it's doing. It can detect a 2-millimeter obstacle. That's like a phone cable. So it even lifts its little mop pads when it rolls onto a carpet. And, of course, because it's DJI, it looks like, you know, a concept prop from Blade Runner. It's got this transparent shell. You know how I like a bit of transparency so you can see what's going on. You can see all the internals and they glow. Very tech objet as art. Price-wise, though, it's also very objet. DJI.
That's value for money on the podcast, that is. Objet.
You know, tech object there, as art. Yeah. I'm just trying to sex it up a little bit, yeah.
And you're doing a good job. Carry on.
Price-wise, it's very DJI. So the top model is about €1,899.
I know. How much?
But you said what's caught my eye, so I'm just throwing this at you.
Well, the owner of a new home, as you are, I can see.
Yeah, well, yes.
The builder's dust settling, I'm guessing.
Yes, need to get cleans in. That's me. UK price still to be decided, so we're not quite sure what it's going to be. It's not a budget buy, but still, they've taken the same engineering brains that stop drones smashing into trees, and basically they've applied it to avoiding Lego
socks
on the kitchen floor. Socks, whatever. I mean, that's the most painful thing in the world, standing on Lego. It's kind of genius. And speaking of drones, they've also launched the latest DJI Neo, which we tested the first model, do you remember, last year in the studio? But this is even better. Under 160 grams. It's so small that it ducks underneath most flight regulations. But it now packs a half-inch sensor, shoots 4K, and actually flies better in the wind thanks to upgraded LiDAR and IR sensors. The battery life is about 19 minutes. Or so, and you get a proper two-axis gimbal, so your footage should be really steady, like silky smooth. It's really DJI's small but mighty drone, I suppose. It's still portable, now much more capable than it was before, and around £200.
What?
Yep, launching in China first.
£200?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is, isn't it? Because there's a lot of tech in that, and it sounds like it's super, super agile. So it launches in China first, then it'll come to the West. So now DJI are cleaning our floors and filming our holidays. In the next announcement is a toaster with a gimbal.
Yeah.
Well, it's not. A gimbal mounted toaster. I wouldn't be surprised if it was something like that.
So, okay. So this time last year, I dropped 1,000 notes on, or a bit more than that, actually, on an Avata 2 from DJI, which is obviously a more advanced version of the Neo. We tested both in the Gadget Show podcast studio, because we do have a studio, folks, for those of you that are interested. If you look back at previous episodes, we've got a really cool kind of warehouse, but we only use it for special occasions, and I think we've got one coming
up.
And
we are going to do one. Yeah, we're going to do one this series, so.
Which is going to be great. And I remember driving the Avata 2 around that studio, going, did I go through your legs or another table or something? But it was incredibly impressive. And dropped the money, got it. Since then, I've flown it all over the UK. I was flying it recently for my movie to try and get some footage of some sort of tenement houses and a tower block over in Lincoln. I've flown it in the very many times where I live on the ocean, getting surfers and things like that. What I would say to you is, while this is incredibly impressive for a quarter of that price that I paid, at that weight, even and with those that stabilization, it is going to be, you know, you're going to have to fly it on calm days. So don't go thinking I'm getting a drone, I can fly it around, because when the wind is more than about, I'd say, 17 miles an hour, it starts to get a little bit shaky. My drone does. Maybe the Neo is more stable, but I suspect probably not, because at that price point. So be aware what you're getting. But my goodness, that packs a lot in for 200 quid, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I'd like it if we could test that. Maybe we can test it when we go to the studio.
I'm sure we can. And I've got to say something about the vacuum cleaner. Best thing I ever did with my robot vacuum, best use case scenario ever, was made a cardboard, when my kids were a bit younger, cardboard figure. Right? Gaffer taped onto the top, and we used it for Nerf gun practice. That was great.
Of course you did.
Oh, mate.
Oh, so that's very Home Alone.
Yeah, totally, man. Now, if you can't get enough of us talking up tech every week, there is even more waiting over on Patreon. That's right. Extra episodes, bonus segments, behind-the-scenes chaos. It's basically a VIP pass to this here Gadget Show podcast, and yes, all the episodes on Patreon are also completely ad-free.
Yeah, and can I throw in that Jason has dropped something pretty special over there?
Yes, you asked for it, and after about 4 months, you got it. My guided tour of my infamous gadget lockup. I've got so much stuff, I have to pay someone to look after it.
So, it's if true. You want,
I've got a shipping container full of stuff. And I filmed it, and it's available for the Patreon peeps to watch.
Yeah, so if you want to support the show and get access to all of that extra goodness, my goodness, then head over to patreon.com/thegadgetshow and join the crew. It genuinely does make a huge difference, and we'd love to have you as part of the gang.
Yeah, I agree. And I actually I'm a member of Patreon because I wanted to understand what it was like, so I'm paid up.
Because you wanted to see what was in your lockup.
Well, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't talking a lot of nonsense. No, it's important. If I'm, we're telling people to use this service, then I want to make sure that it's up to scratch. And also because it gives me ideas. Oh, I know what we could do. We could do a little bit of this. So I could maybe hook up my old Xbox and play the original Halo. How about that? Is that an idea?
How about that?
Let us know in the comments. All right. That's the sort of thing we'll do for the Patreon. Anyway. Right. Quick breather to thank CX, legends of affordability and certified pre-loved tech.
Yeah. Instead of buying brand new, you can trade in what you've already got and upgrade for a fraction of the cost.
Like if you've got a bunch of unused bits, like, controllers, old phones, chargers, you can turn them into credit and walk out with something that you actually want.
Plus, everything they sell is tested and covered with a 5-year warranty, which is huge peace of mind.
Yeah, so check them out at webuy.com or pop into a CX store and see what your old tech is worth.
Jace, you know that we talk a lot about AI in phones. It seems like every podcast we're talking about it now, and chatbots, etc. I watched the video of the new Neo robot from 1X Technologies last week. I know you've watched it as well. By the looks of it, this is one of the first times that we're seeing AI move into something that actually takes physical action in your home. Not information, not content, but actual tasks. And after watching the Wall Street Journal video, I suppose the question is, could this be a real turning point? Because instead of AI existing on a device, the device itself is now embodied as a robot that lives with you. So I thought we should have a chat about this.
Yeah, my goodness, we should have a chat about this, don't you think? We're moving now, apparently, to the next phase of AI, aren't we? Which is where AI is in the world, right? So we have standard AI in a box, and it's a kind of text and verbal interface. We then have the agentic phase of AI, which is what the browser that they've released for Apple computers, MacBooks, and that is all about, because it's got a certain amount of agency. It can go off and browse for you and come back, and potentially that's going to lead to it, you know, doing all the stuff with your credit card and booking flights and the stuff that we've talked about. And then this third stage is letting AI go out into the world and not only just observe it, but experience it physically and interact with it, change it, right? You could argue that that self-driving cars and vehicles are already doing that, and that's true. Yeah. But certainly from a human point of view, you know, this 30-kilogram robot with its 3D lattice polymer body, tendon-driven actuators. I've got the full spec sheet in front of me.
Yeah, so it's actually, if you haven't seen the video, by the way, like, it's the size of a human.
It integrates quite well into a normal sort of family home. It's quite soft, isn't it? And 30K, while not insubstantial, it doesn't mean it's like an industrial robot made out of metal that would hurt you if it went wrong. So according to the manufacturers, there's a full vision language AI system built in. It sees objects, it understands context. You can give it instructions through voice and through an app. And apparently, and this is where we start to question it, Suze. I know you're holding back a little bit. Apparently 4 hours before it returns to its charging bay and recharges itself, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
Shall we get on to the elephant in the room? Or rather, the man with a VR helmet on who's in the room in the video.
Yeah. It's the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain.
It really is. So you remember that story about what were those Amazon Fresh, Amazon Go? I forget what they were. But there's shops in London where you go in, you scan on the way in, and then you just grab stuff and walk out. You don't pay for it. It all gets taken off your account using cameras and sophisticated AI and blah blah blah, and it turned out there was a bunch of guys. I think they were in India. I don't know. Don't shoot me if I'm. Don't shoot the messenger. Right. Well, this is kind of similar in that they've been very open about admitting that most of what you see in just about all the videos online where they revealed this to the world involve most of the time someone telepresently operating the robot. So for example, the journalist in the world, is it Wall Street Journal thing?
Series? Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Did you see the dishwasher moment when she asked him to, was it? Anyway, he goes to load the dishwasher. And he's picking up these glasses out of the sink and putting them. And I'm thinking to myself, God, that's incredible. Like, that's amazing. And in reality, that's not the robot doing it. It's someone remotely operating it. Mm. And so they sort of actually reveal that.
So somebody can see into your house. I mean, is my point here.
There's so many points,
there's so many points. But it's like you've got this impressive thing. Oh, it can lift over 60 kilograms. That's amazing. That is amazing. It is. But what's not amazing is that somebody's now in my house.
Well, I mean, but I tell you what else is amazing. Is their business model. So it's $20,000, and it's a pre-order, and they reckon for next year. And I'm sure that some of the automated stuff that it can do, I seem to remember it's supposed to be able to answer the door fully automated. I'm sure that some of those and more of those will come online as it progresses. But we're getting back to this Apple intelligence thing or the Cybertruck thing where or the what is it called? Optimus Tesla robot thing, which is that it's almost becoming acceptable for people to put down money on a bunch of promises that actually do not exist.
So tell me, how does this work? You pay 20 grand for it in their business yeah. model, but then they've got to employ a person to run that robot. So how does it yeah. work?
I mean, how much is a guy
from the
with
privacy thing aside? Like yeah. as a business, how is that? How does that work?
And also, what if it's 3 a.m. and I want a cup of tea, or I want I forgot to do the dishwasher. Doesn't matter. I paid 20 grand for a robot. Neo, would you load the dishwasher? Yes. Well, then some bloke's asleep in his student flat, and his alarm goes in like, you know, I don't know, Uzbekistan. I don't know where he is, right? And he wakes, God, bloody hell. And he's got
what
to put
want
his
now?
Helmet on. Yeah, he's got to put his helmet on, get in there. He's got to do the washing up. I mean, how much are you going to pay that guy?
Well, you're not. I mean, you're going to pay not very much, are you? Because that's what's going to happen here.
So what you just said is I'm paying 20 grand to get into a kind of slave ecosystem.
It's all weird. I mean, obviously, this is the first sort of genuinely commercial attempt to bring a humanoid domestic robot into our homes. It's not a demo, but it's not ready. And here's my other point on this.
And it fumbles around with the plates as well, Susie. Sorry, carry on.
No, but really can fumbling. Somebody please tell me, just please, why we would need, why do we need this? We're not that busy. We're not
okay.
that busy.
Okay, I'm gonna push back a little bit there.
I don't get it.
No, I know what you mean. No, but I like the way you're phrasing the question. It's very bold. But I would say, you know, with 3 little kids, something like that, that scenario, you know, where a single parent, although they probably wouldn't have 20 grand, but, you know, that sort of home help, like 20 grand for a lifetime, I mean, I don't know how long it lasts for, but even 5 years of domestic help is actually not a lot of money, you know. And you mentioned, I think there's a subscription model as well, isn't there?
I think it's $4.99 a month, dollars.
Instead of the 20 grand?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's £100 a week, which is more affordable than the human
version. Put it on Klarna, if you want.
There, I'll pop it on Klarna. My point is that, you know, the scenario where an elderly, like my mum, for example, right? So my mum's in her 80s, and she's, you know, like a lot of 80-year-olds, less mobile than she used to be, wants to do the gardening, wants to... Having a robot around the house would really help.
Would it, though? Because, honestly, the frustration... I don't know whether I'm just a bit short-tempered and a bit moody. But, well, you know when you have to explain something to somebody over and over? it would be by the bin after week one. It'd be out with the bins,
it'd
honestly.
Be sat there looking really sorry for itself, wouldn't it?
It'd be outside and I couldn't be able to handle it.
Yeah, but the one thing I would say here is that they could silence all of these criticisms, couldn't they, Susie? They could drop it to their first generation investors of 20 grand each next year, and suddenly I'm like, oh my God! Oh, and then I go to buy one and it's like an 18-month waiting list. And I'm like, no! And I have had that with certain products, like this Xbox Pocket thing I keep going on about. So if they can deliver, look, if you take them at face value, what they're saying is, all right, although I don't think they're saying it clearly and authentically enough, if I'm honest, but effectively they're saying, look, it's going to do this, all right? It's going to be able to do this, 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 and this. It's going to be able to, you know, tidy up socks, put the washing machine on, do the dishwashing, answer the door, and be a companion, right? It's going to be able to do that. That's what we've designed. It's 20 grand, can't do it yet, but it's going to be able to do it.
So the question, you know, you would want to know as a journalist or just as a person or a prospective buyer for this, I suppose, is when is this going to work properly without somebody spying into my house? And that question sort of was asked. And the answer was that early adopters that buy this, that spend 20 grand,
all right,
you know, have to accept that they're the beta testers, effectively, and that they need this time and they need these robots and the training to get the AI sorted.
And the money.
So they're going through the motion. So that it's data collection, effectively. But my point is, people are paying 20 grand for that, though. If you pay me 20 grand, I'll come and start your washing machine for you. It's a bit weird. And also, they can't say specifically when it will actually function without the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain. If they said we need exactly 6 months or we need 2 years or whatever it is to get this going, to be fully working without human intervention, then that would be more impressive for me. But it's a bit grey. It's just a bit grey. Yeah. I mean, it's massive. Like, it's really interesting. I'm not on board with it, but I can see why it's so fascinating. I can see why it's interesting and why it's moved on so much. But I do
definitely watch
this
space.
Think it's a bit grey. Yeah, well, absolutely. Watch this space, yeah.
Okay, so this is a very interesting one for me personally, because as many of you know, I live in Cornwall. So anyone who lives in rural bits of the UK, before that I was in Lincolnshire, so I'm thoroughly rural, you know the pain of dead spots and bad phone signal. So hopefully we've got something that might fix this. Virgin Media have announced a multi-year partnership with Starlink Direct to Cell. And this is actually a UK first. Virgin Media O2 will become the first mobile operator in Britain to use Starlink's satellite to mobile network. So this is the same lower Earth orbit constellation that Starlink uses globally with their 650 plus satellites, which is nuts, isn't it? And they're now going to be able to link directly to standard mobile phones using part of O2's existing licensed spectrum. The new service is being branded O2 Satellite, and the plan is it'll kick off with messaging and data first, then gradually expand to more features and app integrations like maps and location services and stuff like that. The key point that they're making is it just automatically activates when you drop out of traditional mobile signal. Your phone just carries on, which, well, I mean, so I had a conversation yesterday, Suze. I rang my wife. She was on the school run. I said, "Have you got to the Big Dipper yet?" And she went, "Yeah, I'm past it." All right. And then I told her what I was going to tell her, which I knew was going to take about 2 minutes, right? Were she not at the Big Dipper yet, right, I would have not started that two-minute story because her phone would have disconnected. So this is a reality for me, okay? This could be huge for places like Cornwall,
I've got black spots, grey areas in Wolverhampton. So, I mean, they are everywhere.
Yeah, there's a lot of rural areas in the Midlands, right? It's very patchy in terms of coverage sometimes.
So this is supposed to be seamless then? This is. Are we at the stage now then with this that where no signal could be an absolute thing of the past?
What I would say is that I think the one thing that I haven't heard a lot of people talking about is, and maybe it's just a me thing, I'd love to know in the comments, I genuinely would like to know your experience. My phone calls now are shite. It's just terrible. I mean, what? I don't know, 3 out of 10, I would say, just roughly speaking.
Wow, really?
Yeah, awful. Awful.
I mean, this could be, if this works, this could be amazing for you then.
Yeah.
There's no word on pricing yet, but it's expected to roll out in the first half of next year.
We'll be watching and waiting. One more thing, Susie, before we go. I want to show you my new watch. Check it out. Which way should I show you?
What you got there?
The right way around. Can you see that? I can't see if you can actually see it.
Yeah, I can see it.
Look at that. Isn't that beautiful?
That's gorgeous, isn't it?
It's the Diatom Blue Dot Full Meteorite Face. That's the name of it. It's a Blue Dot Series Full Meteorite Face. And as the name suggests, look at that glinting light off there. Look.
Very space age.
Yes. Well, in more ways than you might imagine. So it's a watch made in partnership with Sent Into Space, who are a UK company that fly research payloads up to the edge of space using high altitude balloons. I think we worked with them on the Gadget Show, actually, so there's a bit of a link there. This isn't marketing stuff, this is real. Like, so every batch of these watches is flown up above what they call the Armstrong line, which is tens of thousands of feet, over 120,000 feet up in the stratosphere, then recovered, and then built, certified, and sold as what they term space flown. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, I love it. Very cool. I love that too.
I'll give you the spec. 42 millimeter stainless steel case, Swiss Ronda 3540D quartz movement inside. What I will tell you is I've had it for several months now and it keeps great time. Water resistant, quick release straps, blah de blah. Beautiful, really well engineered. Some variants of this watch, because there are quite a few, contain slivers of Gibeon meteorite and Apollo 11 command module, Captain Foil, in the dial, which is absurdly cool as far as I'm concerned. For me, this isn't just about provenance. It's actually a really innovative kind of cutting edge idea from a British company. I think it's superb. Sent into space, normally fly research for universities, governments, medical labs, and people that want to do something cool, put something quirky up in space. Each watch comes with a flight certification tied to its launch. So I think this is lovely. In the move up to Christmas, I just thought this watch, which was sent to me by the guys that sent into space, just to be completely transparent about that. But I think it's a genuinely great idea for a Christmas present. I love mine and I wear it a lot because I think it looks dead cool. So there you go.
It's a fantastic story, isn't it?
It really is.
And you had me at Captain Foil.
Did I?
You
did. Do you know what that is? Because
no, I was going to ask you after the podcast. It sounds so cool.
And that's us done for another episode. Massive thank you, as always, to CEX for backing the Gadget Show podcast and keeping our tech cravings constantly fed.
Absolutely. And before we vanish, we want to say a huge thank you to our amazing Patreon supporters.
Big Gadget love going out to Peter Pinner, Timmy Bigger, Dave Green, Ren Mandagorn, Dave McHugh, Matthew Riley, Dean Day, Chris Cool, Stephen Green, Tall Man with Glasses, Andrew Bamford, and Duncan Bell.
And a big thank you to Colin Jones, Gordon Packer, Richard Martin, Simon Ryland, Philip Eddington, Richard Wykes, and Danny Rushton. Thank you so much. You do keep this going.
And if you want to be part of that exclusive gang and get access to bonus content, extra episodes, and of course, all of it ad-free, jump onto Patreon.
Yeah, just head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow. It takes a couple of seconds and you're in the club.
Okay, that's it. That's it from us. We're off. Our Q&A special, the In the Box edition of the podcast, drops later this week. Make sure you check it out. Make sure you favourite it. Comment. It'll help to get this great endeavour, which we are so proud to bring you, hopefully in front of yet more people. We'll see you next time.
Is the In the Box edition the same as our Inbox edition, or is it different?
Yeah, sorry, you may have pointed out a slight error. Yeah, you're right. The Inbox edition. See you then.
Whatever, it's dropping this week. See you soon.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.